Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
Would you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot jet from an old man in Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the moon and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but you ask cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Don't you know about the waves on the underside?
What do you know?
I'm a hot shot cat from the North Bay, Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cut you all down to size.
What do you know?
Yeah, the street drives in two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
And, of course, it would probably be good if my mic was turned on. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly call-in, well, was a weekly call-in radio show style podcast. And, we discuss topics like politics, history, religion, science, skepticism, economics. Logicast airs every Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Logicast or find us here on the wonderful world of Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/Logicast. You can also listen to previous episodes, follow us, say terrible shit about my mother. That's happened at least once. So yeah, I'm going to be rolling solo tonight. Darby had an issue with her computer, which she is currently taking care of and apparently is in the Apple store. Predict she will probably be there for sort of the next 45 minutes to an hour. This week, I'm going to be discussing Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, his love of God, guns, grits, gravy, diabetes, along with explaining his platform and why he has a better chance of being appointed to run American Atheists than being elected president of the United States. At least I fucking hope so. So usually we start off the week by kind of going over the things that annoyed us. Or start the show, rather, by going over things that annoyed us this past week. And I actually really don't know if I have anything. I mean, there are a lot of things that annoyed me for sure. Like, there's no doubt about it. But I don't know if I have anything that really just... No, you know what? I'm lying, actually. There was something... I was having a conversation with someone the other day who is a for what I thought she was a very brilliant person. I guess even very smart people can be extremely wrong. And very against GMOs, you know, has bought into the hype, I guess, that seems to spin from the left. The dangers of genetically modified organisms, and of course the usual sort of players came out, and by that I mean the natural news links, you know, came out to play during the conversation. And it was sort of like when I got to the point of actually explaining to her why, or rather how, to assess scientific claims that, you know, assert to be scientific, it was very difficult to sort of reason with her in a rational way, because, you know, essentially she reduced every argument down to, yeah, well, you know, that's just something that Monsanto would pay people to say. So, which I find incredible, because, you know, the fossil fuel industry, specifically the larger moneymakers in that industry, in the oil and gas, and I work for a company that works in oil and gas, have spent to the tune of almost $800 million trying to destroy the idea that anthropogenic climate change is actually a reality. And, you know, so it's kind of weird to think that an industry that is not as profitable, that is not as established, would be able to have that kind of power. And when I pointed this out to her, now all of a sudden I'm a shill for Monsanto, which is very weird because I'm pretty sure that I've never received any checks from Monsanto. I'm not sure if they just don't have my correct mailing address or if my drafting instructions are wrong. I can only imagine that someone else in this town is routinely receiving checks deposited directly into their account, you know, which were supposed to be meant for me and, you know, my activism on behalf of Monsanto. So, very strange, very, very strange conversation. But I run into that quite often, actually. And, it, you know, if the basis of your, here's the thing. I'm fine listening to what people say. I'm fine hearing your opinions. I'm fine engaging you. But if your entire worldview, or rather perspective of a specific topic, is based on the existence of a conspiracy, the only way that it continues to perpetuate, that you're proven wrong only because a conspiracy exists, statistically speaking, it's probably not a conspiracy. You're probably just not, and don't take this the wrong way, educated enough to sort of formulate an opinion that is based on hard facts. Facts that are not reliant upon your personal bias. So, just understand that. I mean, we've run into this with regard to mythicism, with GMOs, with vaccines, with evolution. I mean, literally anything and everything that can and has been argued, the people on the dissenting side of the consensus tend to be people whose positions have to rely on the existence of a conspiracy. I mean, and again, I go back to anthropogenic climate change in the sense that, you know, all of this money, there's no doubt that there actually was a conspiracy in this case, but it failed because in the end, science wins out. I mean, you know, literally you don't have the money. No entity, I think, has the money to the money or the power, the influence to have a demonstrable effect on all of the independent researchers, all of the researchers from all these different countries. They just don't. I mean, it would take an inordinate amount of influence to be able to pull that off, especially today in the information age. And I just don't see that happening. Not that it's impossible. I just don't really see that happening. So, moving on from that, I really, really do want to talk about Mike Huckabee. So, just give you guys a little bit of background. Mike Huckabee, presidential candidate, of course, he's a Republican, very religious man, as they all are. I would actually be really impressed if a non-believer ran on the Republican ticket. Like, I would shake that person's hand, if anything, because they have the balls to run in a, you know, in sort of a circle of people who tend to be extremely religious. So, you know, I recall a study not too long ago basically said that most believers would rather have a rapist as opposed to an atheist representing them. Which I find completely ridiculous. Anyway, so Mike Huckabee, he actually got his sort of start in religious fundamentalism by working for James Robison. And for those of you who don't know who James Robison is, he was a guy who coined the phrase, God's people need to come out of the closet. And it's really, there's no doubt that Huckabee's politics was sort of shaped by, you know, Robison's tutelage, if you will. And he was famous for his hatred of anything that even looked gay. So, similar to Falwell's issue, I guess that actually might be where Jerry Falwell developed his problem with the fucking Teletubbies. I mean, some of the younger people listening might not remember the Teletubbies and might not know who Jerry Falwell is. But let me be the first to tell you, that was actually a huge deal back in the day. Strangely enough, I never really understood that. I never got it. It's just kind of strange. Anyway, so after sort of being involved in the, you know, he was like the communications guy for Mike Huckabee was for Jerry Robison. James Robison, and, you know, sort of being at the forefront of the moral majority movement, which is a lot of what independent left-leaning people deal with from the right. Moral majority is essentially nothing more than, than religious people who believe that they have moral authority. So Huckabee then became Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas. And then, you know, after that, he served governor from 1996 to 2007, I think. He also decided to run for president in for the 2008 election. I guess he thought that people would actually vote for another Southern drawl, hyper-religious twat with the limited education and horrible reasoning skills. But after he lost that, obviously, he ended up running over to Fox News, which is basically where every far-right, religiously inclined conservative tends to go. after they no longer have a career in politics. I'm actually just waiting for Rick Santorum to end up having his own show on Fox News. You know, it was apparently a fairly successful show from what I understand. I mean, I, you know, obviously caught tidbits here and there, usually of, you know, him saying something stupid. But he also published several books. He has appeared on, you know, he's on The Daily Show here recently. He's been on The Tonight Show. He's been on CNN. He's been on MSNBC. You know, he's a dangerous idiot, but I don't think that, like, whenever I hear him speak, I believe that he believes what he's saying. I don't think that he's one of these people who just uses the religious thing as a, you know, as a method of culling votes. You know, he's not sort of the robot Reagan, which is what I classified Mitt Romney as. So, let's kind of just jump into this and get into some of Huckabee's positions. And I'm just going to kind of go down the list. Huckabee is definitely against abortion. Strangely, including in cases of rape or incest. So this is something that here recently a lot of conservatives have kind of, and by recent I mean like the last 10 years or so, the conservatives have sort of moved a bit further to the middle on, as in most of them say, I'm against abortion, but in cases of rape or incest or child molestation, I don't oppose it, because obviously the woman did not give consent, or was not put in a position where she could give practical consent. So I'm against forcing a woman to have a child under those circumstances. Huckabee, on the other hand, actually doesn't mind outlawing abortion, even in cases of rape or incest. In fact, he stated that abortion should be legal only when the life of the mother is at risk. He also said that it would most certainly be a good day for America if Roe v. Wade was repealed. So obviously, scripturally, there's absolutely nothing in the Bible that backs this up. And similar to the suicide conversation that we had last week about what scriptural support there actually is against abortion. You know, there are several scriptures in the Bible where, you know, abortion occurs. Obviously, we understand that, you know, that during the early sort of purging that Christians took part in, Jews took part in, the sort of position was to annihilate all enemies of God. And interestingly enough, they leave that part out anytime you start trying to have a conversation with them. And when you ask them what Jesus actually said about abortion or anything even remotely close to abortion, they don't really have anything to say. Usually what I hear, there are a couple different verses I hear. The one most popular is, you know, thou shalt not kill, which obviously then gets into a conversation about whether or not a fetus is in fact a human being. Preposterous notion, in my opinion. You know, a fetus is not a human being. I, you know, my position on abortion has, you know, pretty much remained the same. I don't agree with abortion personally, but I also recognize that my own personal opinions about something, you know, do not necessarily make the best policy choices. So, and I'll give another example. For example, the death penalty. Obviously, if someone, you know, harmed my mother, for example, murdered my mother, my emotional reaction to that would be, yeah, fucking kill him. You know, I mean, obviously. But the intellectual side of me would say that, you know, that the justice system doesn't need to be based on how I personally feel or what I personally want. Same thing with abortion, and some of that comes down to the sort of the societal ick factor, if you will, that we have, you know, just about abortion, that we, you know, we think about children and, you know, and that kind of thing. So it plays a lot on our emotional, sort of emotional strings. However, there's no good reason to believe that your personal wants should be applied to every single other human being on the, you know, sort of in the country. So, you know, we have to come to an agreement about what we will and will not accept. And, you know, my, you know, intellectual position on that is that you do not have the right to force a woman to be pregnant, and you don't have a right to force a woman to remain pregnant. You know, so whether it's in case of rape, incest, or simply a for whatever reason, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, I've had people say, well, you know, what if she's on her third or, you know, sort of fourth abortion? It's like, it doesn't matter. The frequency of it doesn't change the fact that you have the right to force another human being to allow, you know, to allow something to take up real estate in her body. And that's kind of where the segue goes, in the sense that, yeah, I have a certain ick factor. I don't like the idea of abortion. In the same hand, I also recognize that the evidence shows the quickest and best way to prevent abortions is by birth control. Birth control and valid sex education. Interestingly enough, with regard to Mike Huckabee, in January 2014, in response to the federal mandate on contraception, Huckabee said, Democrats want to insult the women of America by making them believe that they are helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in and providing them a prescription each month for birth control. They cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government. Very strange sort of position to have. So there are a couple of different issues with this, and I'm going to try to unpack them one at a time. So number one, this has nothing to do but it's not just with Democrats. And it has nothing to do with insulting women at all. Insurance companies kind of explain this back during this time when we were having this conversation about, you know, about federally mandated birth control. Insurance companies wanted it because more birth control leads to fewer pregnancies, which therefore leads to fewer costs, okay? Fewer costs of unplanned pregnancies. Democrats wanted it because we recognize that the majority of women who have, you know, children, majority of women who end up not have children, but the majority of women who end up getting pregnant, outside of a, you know, outside of a financially stable environment, tend to be those who, you know, are low income. So the idea here is that we're going to offer this. You have the option of whether or not you want to take this. You know, but again, by offering birth control, it reduces pregnancies, which biological extension reduces abortion. I fail to really see why this is a problem. Mike Huckabee is also an advocate of abstinence-only sex education. So he has this belief about birth control, and then he also has this belief about sex education. Both of them are demonstrably wrong when it comes to, but again, and he has terrible, serious problem with abortion. He doesn't actually want to do anything to reduce the frequency of abortion. You know, what this sounds like specifically, you know, by the statement, women cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government. This is, you know, sort of women shaming, if you will. It is the idea that, you know, that every single person who, you know, who walks into their, you know, walks into a clinic can't afford access to birth control. And even if they can't, if we were to assume that, for example, they do not have access to it, whether because there are no clinics available, whether because, you know, prior to the ACA, their insurance did not cover it. Well, now all of a sudden, you know, we have unwanted pregnancies, a bane on not necessarily on society, of course, but, you know, but definitely an additional burden that is added to the, you know, to the healthcare system. An additional burden that is, that is added to some social programs, additional burden that is added to health insurance, an additional burden that is added to school systems. Obviously, nobody is suggesting that, well, no, actually, Mike Huckabee is suggesting that we force these women to, you know, to keep these, you know, to have these children, even if it's not what they really want. But irrespective of that, the best way, most effective way to reduce frequency of abortion, which is something that Mike Huckabee claims that he is for, is to introduce birth control, free access to birth control, actually, and present valid sex education, two things that he is against. So he doesn't want to provide women with the opportunity to not carry a fetus that they don't want to birth, that they don't want to have in their body. He wants to not allow women to have access to free contraception, and he doesn't want to make sure that young people are taught proper sex education. So his grand plan for stopping abortion is to repeal Roe v. Wade. Brilliant. And this guy is running for president, by the way. So, on healthcare, moving on, of course, Huckabee is opposed to the ACA. What he said was is that he wants to give citizens more control over their own healthcare choices. Yeah, we've been doing that for, you know, about the past 4 years, and it has created the most expensive, prior to the ACA, most expensive healthcare system in the entire world that is one of the least effective. Here's the thing, and I always have this conversation with people, and they say, oh, no, you know, healthcare in the United States of America is great, it's phenomenal. Yeah, if you have the money to afford it, it's great. But when you actually, you know, take the statistics, not of the people who could have afforded, you know, health insurance at the time versus the, you know, versus the number of hospitals that we had, but if you actually measured the entire system as a whole, and then proceeded to determine the health of the citizens of this country, I mean, what you find is that not only are we not any better than nations that have universal health care, we're worse than some that don't even have health insurance. Because again, when it's a, you know, sort of a pay-as-you-go kind of system, that's exactly what ends up happening. You know, that elective procedures are, you know, at during the time, I mean, I don't know if people remember this. I mean, it was, you know, a whopping 5 years ago. But there were people who, you know, 10 and 20 years ago were, you know, sort of ushered out the door. Yes, emergency rooms had have to treat people, have to get them stable, and then usher them out the door. But there's no, you know, guarantee that they're actually going to be treated for their illness. And this is something people don't seem to understand. I mean, imagine being homeless and suffering from cancer, being poor and suffering from cancer, having no access to any kind of government assistance, having no access to health insurance, having no access to really any assistance whatsoever. You know, I'm basically being told, yeah, you have cancer. Sorry that you weren't born to a wealthy family. Sorry, you know, you didn't, you know, get lucky enough in life. And, you know, now that lack of luck is exacerbated by the fact that you were unlucky enough to end up with cancer. And by the way, this system is not set up to help you because we're too busy dealing with elective procedures. I mean, It's like real shit that actually happened with you know, some semblance of frequency in the old system. And obviously, I don't agree with all of what occurs in the current system. You know, there's much to be desired. I mean, personally, I'm a fan of single payer. I think that if we're going to have a system, it doesn't need to, you know, healthcare is one of those interesting things where people, it's called an inelastic product, where people will literally pay anything to stay alive. I mean, it is ingrained in us, in human beings, to want to continue to exist. And, you know, as a result of that, people will sell their homes, they'll sell their car, I mean, they'll sell all of their possessions, they'll empty their, I mean, they will go above and beyond and do absolutely everything they can in order to live one more day on this planet. So as a result of that, by making a system designed in that way, a profit center, what you're doing is that you are trying to hedge bets on the lives of other human beings, as opposed to allocating resources nationally, federally, you know, in a way that allows for those who are most in need to be taken care of immediately. So, moving on. Of course, Mike Huckabee is opposed to same-sex marriage and civil unions. He says that Americans should respect gay couples, but no gay adoptions should take place. And he also signed legislation outlawing same-sex marriage in Arkansas. Because nothing says I respect you more quite like, no, all of these children who are in desperate need of homes and who, you know, move in between multiple homes throughout their, you know, throughout their lifetime in a, you know, broken and awful system. Nothing says I respect you more quite like you are not allowed to adopt them or take care of them or love them or give them a home or give them an opportunity at life. You know, at a good life. I really wonder if you could quantify this in a, you know, in a demonstrable way. I really wonder how many people would come forward and you know, say that life would have been better than just having parents, whether they're same-sex or heterosexual or whatever, it doesn't matter. How many children... who, you know, went into the adoption program and phased out. And by phased out, I mean that nobody ever adopted them and they were 18 years old when they finally got out on their own, you know, would have said that, yeah, having two loving parents who wanted to take care of me and wanted to give me a good life, you know, would say that this kind of legislation has passed, you know, has been passed all over the country, you know, has caused actual harm. I mean, when the act of mandating something lawfully is more terrible, has more terrible side effects than the opposite, wouldn't you probably say that law or that mandate is bad, is terrible, didn't really do any, not only didn't fix the problem, didn't fix any problems, but actually made the issue even worse. I mean, because now you're talking about a percent of the population, you know, that is not allowed to adopt and take care of kids. And this goes back to the idea that Mike Huckabee is against abortion. He wants these children to be born. Okay, fine. So now they're born to parents who don't want them, who give them up for adoption. And now Huckabee limits the ability for these children to actually gain parents who would love them, all because of their sexual orientation. Like, who gives a fuck? Seriously, who cares? I mean, that's what's incredible about this. That's what's absolutely incredible about that. I mean, it boggles my mind that gay adoption is such, it's still here in the South, you know, is such a contentious issue. Gives a fuck. Do you care about the children? Do you care about the children being placed in homes where they're going to have parents who actually love them? Well, if that's your main concern, it shouldn't matter if they're, you know, if they're same sex or, you know, opposite sex. It shouldn't matter. That shouldn't even be a conversation that we have. I mean, you know, these adoption agencies, you know, are going to go, you know, run these parents the gamut to try to figure out if they're good people, if they make enough money, what kind of house they keep, whether or not stuff's childproof, whether or not they're mature, whether or not, you know, they, you know, possess the patience to handle children, you know, that come from, you know, from foster care, that come from the adoption program, some of whom, you know, were terribly abused, and some of whom came from, you know, dysfunctional households, and some of them have never even had a fucking bed. I mean, Mike Huckabee cares about these children so much that he's willing to place his own, you know, sort of bigoted and cherry-picked religion above their potential well-being. That actually makes me mad. You know, it really does. I mean, it seriously pisses me off that we can have someone who doesn't want birth control, who doesn't want valid sex education, who doesn't want abortions, but he also doesn't want a segment of the population being able to actually adopt children. Why? Is it for any kind of, you know, evidentiary reasons? No, not at all. Has nothing to do with it. Evidence has nothing to do with it. It's his own personal and bigoted position, you know, that prevented, I guarantee you, literally prevented some of these children from, you know, having access to a loving home, having access to financially well-off parents who could have taken care of them and given them a good future. And some of these kids are going to phase out of that program, and then, you know, statistically speaking, they're going to end up on, you know, they're going to end up on government assistance, at least for the first five years of their lives. And what makes it even worse is that some of them are going to end up in prison. So, you know, we're going to end up, society is going to end up providing for them regardless. But we didn't want to do anything to help them when we had the opportunity, because the fucking Bible says that being gay is an abomination. Absolutely, positively absurd. And of course, Huckabee also signed legislation outlawing same-sex marriage in Arkansas. You know, this is really my whipping boy when it comes to conservatives. For a group of people who claim to love the Constitution and freedom so much, they sure do have a real hard time with the idea of freedom and the Constitution. See, the First Amendment explicitly states that Congress will make no law recognizing either, you know, will make no law recognizing an establishment of religion or preventing the free exercise thereof. What people like David Barton, who is, of course, someone Mike Huckabee loves, will say is that, yeah, well, the wall is only one way. It was, you know, sort of to prevent the government from, you know, establishing a state church is what I heard. Of course, you go back over what Thomas Jefferson said and James Madison and George Washington and Benjamin Franklin. You know, what you actually discover is that's not what they intended at all. David Barton would have actually probably been the person they wanted to keep out of governments, or at least keep his ideas far away from governments, you know, in the sense that they wouldn't want him to try to not only, you know, use his religious beliefs to force it upon the rest of us. But, you know, it never ceases to amaze me that people who talk about how great the Constitution is and how great America is, you know, that at every opportunity, what usually comes out of their mouth next is something along the lines of, yeah, well, I know that, you know, that you should have freedom, but what about my freedom to not be offended by your actions? That's really what this is all about. I mean, let's just get down to the basics of this. I mean, when we talk about LGBT equality, you know, and you hear this idea of religious freedom, that's really what this is. It's, I don't want to have to be offended because I take the Bible so fucking literally. You know, I don't want to have to be offended by your relationship. How does it affect me? Well, you know what? It doesn't. But I believe that that's not what God intended. And my beliefs, my personal beliefs, my religious beliefs about this specific thing should be more important than your right to express how you feel about your partner, to be recognized by the state and by the government and in the state in which you pay taxes to, that you and another consenting adult, if you are of the same sex, that offends me to the point to where I'm going to try to legislate your right to have the same rights as me. It's just incredible. I mean, literally every single time, I wish these people would just admit it, they don't give a flying fuck about freedom, about anybody else's freedom. They only care about their own. And yet, this is somehow the moral majority in this country. That's what vexes me. That's what I cannot even begin to fathom the amount of cognitive dissonance it takes to be that fucking oblivious. I really can't. That you are literally telling other Americans, other people who were born in this country, who pay taxes in this country, who work hard in this country, some of them are you know, have served this country, you know, that they are not allowed to have the exact same rights as you because your religious opinions say otherwise. That's what's incredible. And it's like it never occurs to them. I mean, you know, you rarely ever hear someone go, you know, yeah, I really only cared about what was important to me and, you know, whether or not I was offended about gay marriage. And I realized that was a wrong position to have, because if I want to be intellectually consistent, I have to accept that, you know, this country is not run by the Bible. It's run by the Constitution. Absolutely absurd. But of course, people like Mike Huckabee believe that. And there are plenty of morons who read his books, believe what he says, listen, you know, to his speeches, and they go, you know, it makes perfect sense that I should stand with God and I should stand against homosexuality. Of course, Mike Huckabee doesn't feel the same way about gluttony. Nor do his children. And then, of course, we get to evolution. So, I'm sure you guys don't have to fucking guess whether or not Huckabee supports intelligent design. He does. And he's actually stated he does not accept the validity of Darwin's theory of evolution, which is great because Mike Huckabee is a brilliant scientist. He was quoted in July 2004, and he said that I think that students should, you know, also should be given exposure to the theories, not only of evolution, but to the basis of those who believe in creationism. Again, brilliant. For one, and again, sort of trying to unpack this, if you will, there's no real evidence to support the idea that we were, you know, either made fully formed, or that the Earth is 6,000 years old, or that the universe is 10,000 years old, or that, you know, some kind of benevolent deity created us because he was just fucking bored. There's no evidence of any of this. Evolution is all over the place. In fact, evolution itself is a fact. Things do evolve and change over time, period. That is a fact. That is a fact that is established in every single thing that you do. Stars evolve, human beings evolve, all life forms on this planet evolve at some point. You evolve. You know, if you went from being a baby to an adult, you evolved. That's the way evolution works. You know, granted, on a smaller scale. So evolution itself is indeed a fact. Darwinian evolution, you know, provides a model which has stood up to basically the test of every single living organism on this planet, you know, provides a model that explains how evolution occurs, which obviously is with regard to natural selection. It's a bit more complicated than that. We're not going to have a sort of rest of the 15 minutes of this show discussing evolution. But I do find it very interesting that Huckabee believes that, you know, we should kind of treat this like it's guys, come on. I mean, we should just have, you know, this ability for children who believe this nonsense to have an outlet inside of classrooms. No, no, we fucking shouldn't. And in fact, multiple courts, including the Supreme Court, have ruled that, you know, this sort of religious indoctrination is in fact just that. It is religious indoctrination, that there's absolutely no scientific basis behind the idea of creationism. There's absolutely no evidence. I mean, there's a reason why creationists, you know, pick through the literature and comment on, you know, evolutionary findings. There's a reason why they do that and don't produce any evidence of their own. There is not a single peer-reviewed, researched study, experiment available anywhere that comes anywhere close to demonstrating that creationism is real. And that's how science works. I mean, that's the only way that you can do anything. You have a hypothesis. Okay, you have to develop a model to test it. Then you have to test it. Then you have to submit it to peer review. Then your colleagues and people, maybe not even your colleagues, maybe it's people that hate you, you know, have to try to recreate your experiment. And if they do, then it moves forward. Then more people conduct testing and more people try to recreate experiments. I mean, this is the way the scientific process works. There is not a single peer-reviewed study or experiment that has ever been conducted or submitted about creationism. Not one. Not one. And if you don't have an experiment, and if you don't have any testing, you don't have science. And what's insane is that, you know, people say, well, you know, evolution doesn't answer this and evolution doesn't answer this, therefore creationism is real. No, 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 that's not how it works either. Even if it were possible that we could throw out all of evolution in terms of what we understand about evolution, that still doesn't mean that creationism is correct. It's not a two sides of the, you know, of the same coin kind of argument. If evolution were disproven today, highly, highly, highly fucking unlikely, might even take an act of God, were disproven today, that doesn't mean that creationism is now all of a sudden real. You have to have experiments. You have to have demonstrations. I mean, you know, I've never once heard of a teacher, you know, of a science teacher who sits in a lecture, you know, who's a creationist, who goes, today we're going to test creationism, and then proceeds to, you know, to perform a kind of test that would prove creationism. I've never heard of that before. All I've heard are, you know, critiques, usually really terrible, awful, horrible critiques by people who severely, severely lack the, you know, lack the kind of intellectual background to be able to make those assessments, make those critiques of evolution. I mean, that's all you ever hear about. You know, they comb through the literature and comb through the research, and then what they basically say is, well, I have a problem with this, and I have a problem with this, and I have a problem with this. Ergo, the theory of evolution is wrong. Ergo, creationism must be correct. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And again, there's a reason why we don't see any creationists submitting peer-reviewed literature. We don't see any experiments. That there's nothing that creationists can offer that you or I or anyone else can go out and actually test. It sounds great to people who don't understand science. And it's one of the reasons why people like Mike Huckabee, you know, are so invested in ensuring that, you know, these quote-unquote theories are kind of taught to children. And, you know, that kind of goes back to my other point, a point that I've made previously, that, you know, that kids in classrooms don't get to decide what is or isn't scientific. I mean, the point of a classroom, point of education, is based on instruction. I mean, you know, kids are told what the experts, what the science, what the experiments, things that are far above their capacity. You know, granted, it's related in a way that they can understand, but they're not the ones making the decision about what is or isn't scientific. That's absurd. I mean, it would be like asking a bunch of kids what they feel about the Holocaust and then going, well, you know, we got 10 kids over here who don't really believe it happens. I guess we just got to start teaching alternate theories about history. It's absurd. It's absolutely ridiculous. So anyway, Mike Huckabee doesn't have any chance of being elected president. And, you know, I mean, again, I genuinely think that he believes all this shit. But, you know, regardless, he's still a moron. All right, so we're going to do a new thing. I'm going to do a new thing this week called This Week in Dumb for like the last sort of 8 minutes here. And I'm basically going to go into a monologue and talk about crazy shit that happened in the news. So Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal issued an executive order to protect poor, marginalized, and terrified Christians in his state that are scared that gay people will have the same rights as they do. Jindal is actually quoted as saying, "I absolutely intend to fight for this legislation and any other that seeks to preserve our most fundamental freedoms." Really? This is what Jindal wants to focus on? Louisiana is the worst in the entire United States educating children. It has the fourth highest rate of adult obesity, is second in the rate of uninsured, second in poverty, has the second worst economy, and is last in health care for seniors. But it does come in first place that the number of children living in poverty is first in the rate of incarceration and first in high school dropouts. It's also first in the number of brown-skinned governors who commission a self-portrait to make themselves look whiter than the ginger from Harry Potter. If Governor Jindal really wanted to protect fundamental freedoms, maybe he should try focusing on the freedom of his constituents, not be uneducated, impoverished, and sick. Also this week in Dumb, Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill took to Twitter to express her anger over a rape scene in the most recent episode of Game of Thrones. "Okay, I'm done, Game of Thrones. Gratuitous rape scene, disgusting and unacceptable. It was a rocky ride that just ended." This is a show based on a set of books about a group of treacherous assholes from different levels of privilege who fuck everything inside and plot to murder one another to acquire more power. It's like the Republican Party, but instead of flying dragons, they get Mitch McConnell as a turtle. Yes, rape is horrifying, but you know what else is horrifying? Decapitating someone in front of their children, slicing off a man's cock, stabbing a pregnant woman, burning two preteen boys alive, then cutting off one of their legs and hanging them from the castle gates, torturing prostitutes to death, killing your father while he's taking a shit, having your pet eat someone else's face off, or, as I like to say, a litany of things Alan West wishes he could add to his resume. George R. R. Martin bases his books on actual history. You know, the shit they don't tell you about in school because you're too busy being indoctrinated with abject nationalism. Abir al-Janabi was a 14-year-old Iraqi girl who was gang-raped by four American soldiers in 2006. They broke into her house, took her parents and younger sister into another room where they executed them, and then the foursome took turns raping the poor 14-year-old before shooting her in the head and setting her on fire. Game of Thrones is disgusting? Well, sure. But the horrid shit that we see in the fictional Game of Thrones is nothing more than a reflection of the real, tangible, awful shit that we do to one another every single day. And last in This Week in Dumb, Obama decided to brave the world of social media and make his own Twitter account. As you can expect, he was greeted cordially by the Twitter sphere, with intellectual powerhouses espousing such greetings as, "Hello, nigger. And what do you call the first black president of the United States? A nigger." And stop being a nigger. It's bad. Jesus fucking Christ. All I did was join Twitter. I'd hate to see the reaction of people when they find out their phones can be tapped without a warrant, or that all their data is being mined, collected, and stored by the NSA, who operates under the authority of a secret court. Or that we're getting a trade deal rammed through before anyone has an opportunity to look at it because, well, we have to protect the secrets of multinational corporations who want nothing more than to create American jobs. Yeah, right. You know what American conservatives get mad about? Well, besides Barack Obama being born black, welfare. Holy fuck. This country spends so much time talking about people with no money, no power, no team of lobbyists, and no lawyers that they seem to forget about the small group of individuals with all of those things who have managed to distribute almost all of the new wealth in this country directly to themselves. Try to have a conversation with the average conservative voter about derivative speculation and why lower taxes on the wealthy promote money hoarding, and they'll say two things. Number one, math is for college-educated liberal fags. And two, this country spends too much on welfare. During the early part of the 20th century, do you know what happens? There were so many poor people working long hours with terrible compensation, while those at the top prospered, that the workers actually revolted. That's right, a bunch of left-leaning liberals, socialists, and communists began holding sit-downs at factories, addressing the government to get it involved, and lo and behold, unions were created and laws were passed. Now, say what you want about unions in this country, but let's be clear about something. The middle class wouldn't exist without unionization. And now that the spread has gone from 1 out of 3 workers belonging to a union to 1 in 10, nobody needs to be surprised that as union representation has fallen, so has the number of people who belong to the middle class. The real irony here is that if things continue this way, the conservatives who spend so much time chiding the poor and fighting to cut their benefits might actually end up regretting that decision when they're forced to join the ranks of the poor people that they hate so much. You have been listening to Logicast. We are on every Thursday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Logicast or find us on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Logicast. This is your host, Jared Smith, and good night.